Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. It's a real pleasure to have you here. It's also an honor and a pleasure to have Reverend Lee Atherton of Coach Rev at the Crossroads here on Close Up Radio exclusively. Reverend Atherton is ordained as a clergy person, of course, and highly sought after end-of-life and grief coach, offering hope, healing, and support for those who are dying and grieving. Through her unique practical coaching program, she offers an all-inclusive approach specifically tailored to each client so they can purposefully decide on their own terms how they wish to live life's final chapter. With a commitment to honoring your unique self, she creates a safe, judgment-free space for one to explore. She'll support you and your loved ones every step of the way, mentally and emotionally and spiritually, to make the dying process as dignified and peaceful and comfortable as possible. Through powerful questions, she skillfully encourages us to dig deep, sort through pent-up feelings, and discover our own inner awareness so we can focus on action that is meaningful to our own life story. Lee also works in partnership with her beloved four-legged friend and companion Shadow, a service and crisis response dog who is instrumental in providing mental and emotional support so many with the genuine and unconditional love only a furry friend can bring is present. As a dedicated volunteer for first responders, she is never without Shadow, who helps those in need thrive in his comforting, caring presence. You know, additionally, Lee also offers an invaluable workshop entitled, Wait, I'm Not Ready, targeted to all age groups, which addresses all the questions individuals have and allows us to ponder living and dying. What a perfect name, huh? Wait, I'm Not Ready. I think we'll all sign up for that one. My ultimate mission, she says, is to positively impact the lives of at least 100,000 people. She's impacted so many already. It's amazing. Her website, I encourage you to go and check it out. It's Coach Rev, R-E-V, the word coach, and then Rev, R-E-V, .com. Live and direct from a beautiful part of New England in Marlborough, Massachusetts, let's welcome Reverend Lee Atherton of Coach Rev at the Crossroads to Close Up Radio for this exclusive conversation for the next 30 minutes. Reverend Atherton, thank you very much for joining us here on the program. It's a pleasure.
Thank you, Jim. It is a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. Now, during the conversation, did you want me to call you Reverend Atherton or Lee? I'll do whatever works for you.
You can call me Lee. I'm very informal, but thank you for asking.
And I say you can call me James, Jim, or Jimmy. Just don't call me late for supper.
And there you go.
That's it. Welcome to the show. And levity is something that, you know, I use a lot because I think it's just, for me, it comes naturally. But in certain times, you need to find ways to smile. You need to find ways to be positive and to laugh at the idiosyncrasies of life.
That is
tell
so
us,
true.
Because life can really be heavy and heady, as we know. And we've experienced a lot of it in the last couple of years in ways that we would never have been able to script or plan. Tell us, what is it about this particular focus for you initially that inspired you to really want to focus on end-of-life and grief coaching? Maybe experiences in your own life's journey that you've dealt with, that you've had, and you've worked through that pointed you in the direction of being very relatable to those who are going through something similar.
Yes. So it was many years before I came into the world of end of life that a colleague said to me, you really should be a hospice chaplain. And I said, yeah, no thanks. That's not for me.
Right.
And that conversation went on for a few years until I was in between jobs and she was headed off on an extended vacation and needed someone to cover. She said, come on, you can do it for just a month, can't you? And yeah, you know, I can do anything for a month. And Jim, as they say, the rest is history. I filled in for her and it was, you know, it's almost hard to put words around it. It is such an honor to be with people who are at this time of their lives. I'm always touched by, they don't know me from a hole in the wall, but they welcome me in to this profound passage.
It's so beautiful.
And so I've been doing hospice work that turned into end-of-life coaching and grief support for over 15 years now, and I can't think of doing anything else.
Mm. You know, that's a beautiful thing because it's not something that everybody can just do, and we've had hospice for an uncle, and they're incredible. They're incredible not only with the care that's needed during, but also the follow-up for the family after there's been the loss is extraordinary.
Right.
So hats off to anybody involved in hospice.
Thank you.
You're also an end-of-life. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, you mentioned levity earlier.
Yes.
And I think that's a big part. You know, in the American society, most of us are wanting to pretend that death doesn't happen. It's overwhelming. It's a hard topic. But bringing in that levity can make such a difference. And when you were talking about that, I was reminded of a funeral I officiated. She was a grandma, and the grandkids loved that she kept a bowl of M&Ms on her coffee table. And so at her funeral, instead of sprinkling dirt on her gravesite, we sprinkled M&Ms. And so that family left there with memories, not just of missing grandma and how sad that was, but with a chuckle in their heart. And that's part of what I try to bring to this time of life that for many just isn't easy.
Isn't that fantastic? That's really... Let's describe a little bit your work as an end-of-life coach. Some people might not even, you know, they've heard of all the different kinds of coaches out there, but they might not even realize that there is somebody that is an end-of-life coach and can really be there at that crucial time. Let's talk a little bit about the work of an end-of-life coach and how you approach it.
Okay. I sum it up by I help people live their dying. So most of my clients are people who've gotten a terminal diagnosis or are elderly and know that death for them is around the corner. And I help people take that time that they have left through questions and explorative conversation, finding out what's really important for them. I love to tell the story of one of my hospice patients who, at Christmas, he had a wonderful, fabulous Christmas time, and by New Year's Eve, he was in the hospital, and on New Year's Day, he received the diagnosis that he had stage 4 bone cancer. This young man, he was only in his early 40s. He came onto our hospice services. I met him. He had to be in a nursing home because there wasn't care for him at his regular home. And I talked to this man. Our first visit, he just opened up and shared with me some of his deep pain, that he had two children. They were I want to say 17 and 20, right around there, from whom he was estranged. And he said, now I'll never have time to fix that. And I said, yeah, we can fix that. Let's see what we can do. He also had talked about his favorite author from the time he was a little boy. And he said he wanted to go fishing one more time. And although from the time of that conversation to the time he died was only, I think, about 3 months, I was able to facilitate a conversation with him and his children. And at the end of that conversation, they all said, I love you to each other and I forgive you to each other. We got that author who just happened, how cool is this? He just happened to be visiting someone, a family member in the same town. He said, yeah, I'll come see him. So we surprised this young man with a visit and signed books from his author, the favorite author.
Mm-hmm.
And although it was pulling him in a wheelchair to the side of the lake, we brought him for that last fishing excursion. And that's what I try to do. I try to find what really matters to the person. What do they want to do between now and the end? And how can we make that happen?
That's so beautiful. That's really amazing. It's really great work that you do. You know, they live, you're dying. So immediately when I hear that, I'm thinking of there's oftentimes when dying is happening, processing, we stop. The clock stops, we stop, and we freeze until the moment happens. And
exactly.
You're saying you're still alive. You're still here. There's things to be said, things to be done, things to be experienced, life to be lived, people to talk to and see. Dick Van Dyke reruns to still watch and enjoy. I mean, there's a lot of things to still do. Plant the garden. Live, you're dying. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you summed it up really well. And then living it right to the very last breath. And that may be planning. What do you want at that moment? Some people feel like they want to be just alone. Others want to be surrounded by family and friends and laughing. Talking about pain, what level of pain is comfortable for you? And some people say, I want no pain. If that means that I'm not aware of what's going on around me, that's fine. And other people say, no, I want to be seeing and listening to my loved ones until the last moment. And it also means talking to your loved ones. And instead of making it, oh, my God, mom's reaching the end. What do I do? Oh, mom's coming to a close. Her life is closing this last chapter. How do we talk about it ahead of time so that you can come to this space with peace, with understanding of what's going on, with questions answered, with having had the conversation with your loved one that you might not otherwise have if you're still afraid of it? So there are a lot of pieces that go into it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I know probably caught the attention of our faithful listeners on Close Up Radio was when I was mentioning your beloved dog, Shadow. Tell us about Shadow and why he's so important in the work that you do.
Oh, I love Shadow. Shadow I've had for almost 5 years now. And he came to me initially as a, I got him when he was a puppy and trained him to be my service dog. I had gone through a traumatic experience in life, so he was what's known as a post-traumatic stress service dog. Just did amazing things for me to make me feel comfortable and safe, and helped me through anxiety and all of that, many things. Obviously, I've come to a point where I am much better and able to function and work on my own, but I didn't want all that to be lost, all of what he offered. So I found a program through my volunteer work as a first responder chaplain for him to be certified as a crisis response dog. Not to be confused with a therapy dog. A crisis response dog has significantly more training, given that we're at the scenes of fires or major car accidents and such like that. And so just naturally between what he did for me and what he does for my first responders, he fell right into the role of being there to support people in the stages of end of life. I've got a client who excitedly looks forward to our visits with Shadow every week. She's 96 years old, if you can imagine. He has come to funerals with me where children have played with him and felt, you know, not a scary environment anymore. I had a daughter who's a young woman in her 30s whose both parents had died. And Shadow, she told me afterwards, was instrumental in helping her get through that time. And the same with grief. A lot of my grief work is done virtually, and he, when I call him up on my lap, and that helps people to just, it brings a smile to their face, which we need. When in those sad moments, he brings a ray of lightness and joy and sunshine.
Unconditional love, for sure, on many levels.
Oh, you've yeah. got it. That is absolutely for sure.
Yeah. What are some of the meaningful things we can do to leave our legacy behind after we are gone? You know, sometimes there's folks that'll say, well, you know, I took care of everybody else. I was the caretaker. You know, I did for everybody else. I don't really have a legacy of my own. I didn't build, you know, the pyramids in Egypt, and I didn't, you know, find some cure, or I didn't build some new technological app or anything. How do I,
you know,
leave a legacy, you know? But everybody has a legacy.
Yeah. Everyone has a legacy. You don't have to do any of those big world-renowned things to leave a legacy. That caregiver you mentioned also leaves a profound legacy, maybe even more so, because of the lives she or he touched individually. I love hearing stories after someone has died about what the person said or did that just really often was a game changer for the person who's telling me the story that we don't ever know. Right. And then in terms of leaving a legacy, and this is where my wait, I'm not ready workshop comes in, is planning that legacy, planning, beginning the conversation about what are the things that are important to us and what do we want to leave? How do we want to be remembered? What do we want at the end of our life? And what do we want afterwards, after we die? And being clear on that, when I've had people who have said, I want to be cremated, I want to be buried at St. Jude's Cemetery in Northampton, and here's what I want my funeral service to look like, or my memorial service. That leaves a legacy for the people who otherwise would have to be figuring that all out at the last minute. And it seems at first glance that, oh, that's not a legacy. But when I've watched those people who have received that gift from their loved one who's died, it makes such a difference for them. And it's something that they remember for years. I've touched base with people from you know, even 10 years ago, a funeral that I've officiated, and they've said, yeah, you know, I still love that so much that I didn't have to think of any of those pieces. But she did that for me. What a gift. Even well, what do you want your obituary? You know, and people say, I don't want to write my own obituary. But you know what? It can be fun to do that, and it really is a tremendous gift.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
yeah.
Considering how closely you've worked with individuals who face death, what is your outlook on the meaning of death, and has that changed over the years, and does it continue to morph and tweak and change as your own life is lived? Before you started doing this work, was your view different than it is now,
being
so immersed in this work? Obviously, you know, you have a faith-based background, so your vision and thought process aids you in a beautiful way. Tell us about your outlook on the meaning of death. It scares a lot of people.
It certainly has. It does. It does. And my outlook has morphed over the years, and I expect it will continue to do so. I would say one of the biggest changes is that I've become comfortable with the conversation. I want to help others be comfortable. In fact, I'm in a couple weeks doing my first, it's called Death Over Dinner. Come to my house for dinner and let's talk about death in a fun way, in a relaxed way, and start making it comfortable.
That doesn't mean you're not a good cook, does it?
Oh, goodness. I was thinking of catering it. right. And then thinking about before I was a hospice chaplain, my mom had died on hospice. And I had been to some funerals of other family members, and I was very rigid in my thoughts, and going into hospice certainly was an eye, soul, and heart opener.
Yeah.
And really, the meaning of death, hard to put into only a few words, but for me personally, it doesn't mean the end. I don't know what's next. None of us really know for certain, but I really do believe there's something. And I think of my dad when he died. My mom had died many years earlier, and my daughter had said to Pepe one day, you know, Pepe, I just heard this song, and it was something about dancing in heaven. And he said, I want you to listen to it, because when you die, you're finally going to be able to dance with Graham again. Fast forward to his last moments, I was with him, and he had been unconscious. And he opened his eyes, and he was looking off in the distance, and he got this big, big grin on his face.
Yeah.
And I said, Dad, do you see Graham? And his head nodded a little. Do you see Mom? I mean, his head nodded a little, and I said, oh, it's okay. Go dance with her. And he closed his eyes and let out his final breath. Now, whether that's heaven or a soul that's going to be reincarnated, I don't know. But I have seen that so many times that I know that there's something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Out of all of this comes this wonderful workshop that you've created, which is titled a phrase that I think everybody has probably said or will probably say is, wait, I'm not ready. Tell us about the workshop.
The workshop is based on a pretty well-known document throughout the United States and now even internationally called The Five Wishes. And It's a workshop to look at what you wish for when your life is ending. Many of us think of, oh, we should have a will, and we should have a healthcare proxy. Maybe we've thought about whether we want to have a do not resuscitate order in place, but there's so much more. What are your wishes, not just medically, but physically? Do you want to be in the hospital or do you want to die at home? What do you want spiritually? Do you want your faith leader to come give you a blessing at the end? What is your faith? What to know to make the transition be more peaceful for you? What do you want emotionally? And I'm missing one. Spiritually, emotionally, medically. But anyway, it's looking at all of those questions so that you don't have to think about it at the last minute. And I have this workshop. I encourage people of all ages to attend this workshop. We often think about planning these final moments, weeks, maybe even months, when we're old. But you know what? Think about the crisis. Think about the traumatic accident where all of a sudden decisions have to be made, whether it's you making them for yourself or your family having to make them for you. No one wants to be doing it in the midst of that crisis. Our thoughts aren't in a place where we have the capacity to think about them. So it's a step in the process of how can we make our wishes known and do it in a legal way. So this Five Wishes document is a legal document in almost every state. So it's going through that, and how do you complete it? How do you think about these questions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. It's really amazing. We only have, I can't believe, 2 minutes left, but you are we'll have to have you come back because this is such a rich and important, I mean, every single person listening live or who listens to this later, this impacts every single one of us. You're also a pet loss and grief coach. Tell us about that.
You know, a lot of people who aren't pet owners, who haven't had that faithful companion giving you unconditional love, don't really get that for some people, the death of their pet can be just as devastating as the death of a family member or a best friend. I had a client who was told she could not take any time off from work, but this, her dog, was her only family member. And that was so difficult for her. So I offer grief support because it matters. It's important to have that death recognized.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't think it matters. It so does. And I want to be there for those people who've lost a pet.
Absolutely. We've got about 90 seconds. Do you have a closing message for our listeners to help them through?
My closing message would be take steps wherever you are in life's journey to make your final chapter, your closing moments, be peaceful for you and your family. And if you're not sure what those steps are, reach out to an end-of-life coach. It's a gift you give yourself. It's the gift of peace you give those who are left behind. And don't delay.
Exactly. Yeah. Amazing conversation. I hope we get a chance to explore some more. Maybe here's some.
Oh, thank you.
Well, Coach Rev, R-E-V.com is the website, CoachRev.com. Reverend Lee Atherton of Coach Rev at the Crossroads is our guest. Lee, it was really a pleasure. I hope we expand some more and hope you enjoyed the time with you.
I did enjoy it, Jim. It was an honor to be with you this morning, and I look forward to another opportunity as well.
Absolutely. You be well, you keep well, and thanks for all the beautiful work that you do. It's absolutely important and quite amazing. Reverend Lee Atherton, again, of Coach Rev at the Crossroads, the website, www.coachrev.com. Jim Masters here, thanking you for your time this time till next time, inviting you to stay right there, and I will be back in less than 30 minutes with another amazing guest to share with you as well, right here on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, have a terrific day. Thanks for joining us, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.